Reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 11, Chapter 5, Text Number 42, Narada's Teachings to Vasudev. Svapada malam bhajata priyasya Chaktanya bhavasya hari paresha Karamayat chat patitam kitam chir Tanoti sarvam hedi shani vishtaha Svapada malam bhajata priyasya Chaktanya bhavasya hari paresha Karma yachat patitam katam chid. Tanoti sarvam hidi shani vishtaha. Svapada malam bhajata priyasya. Chaktanya bhavasya hari paresha. Karma yascha patitam katanjit Noti sarvam hidi shani vishtaha Mothers. The lotus feet of Krishna, the shelter of the devotees. Bhajata, who is engaged in worshipping. Priyasya, who is very dear to Krishna. Chakta, given up. Anya, for others. Bhavasya, of one whose disposition or inclination. Hari, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Paraisha, the Supreme Lord. Vikarma, sinful activities. Yat, whatever. Cha, and. Utpattitam occurred katanchit somehow dunoti removes sarvam all riddhi in the heart sanivishtaha entered. Translation: one who is thus given up all other engagements and has taken full shelter at the lotus feet of Hari, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, is very dear to the Lord. Indeed, if such a surrendered soul accidentally commits some sinful activity, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is seated within everyone's heart, immediately takes away the reaction to such sin. Purport. In the previous verse, it was clearly described that a fully surrendered devotee of the Supreme Lord has no need to perform ordinary worldly duties. Now in this verse, it is revealed that devotional service is so pure and potent that a surrendered devotee of the Lord has no need to perform any other purificatory process. As described in the sixth canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, a surrendered devotee has no need to perform pariyaschitta, or atonement for an accidental fall down into sinful activity. Since devotional service is itself the most purifying process, a sincere devotee who has accidentally stumbled on the path should immediately resume his pure devotional service at the lotus feet of the Lord, and thus the Lord will protect him, as stated in the Bhagavad Gita 9:30. Abhichet sadaracharo bhutte mam mananyabak sadhu eva samantabhiha samyag vyavasito hisa. The word chaktanya bhavasya in this verse is very significant. As stated in the previous verse, a pure devotee realizes clearly that all living entities, including Brahma and Shiva, are part and parcel of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and thus have no separate or independent existence. Realizing that everything and everyone is part and parcel of the Lord, a devotee automatically is not inclined to commit sinful activities by violating the order of God. However, due to the powerful influence of material nature, even a sincere devotee may be temporarily overwhelmed by illusion and deviate from the rigid path of pure devotional service. In such a case, Lord Krishna himself, acting within the heart, removes such sinful activities. Even Yamaraj, the Lord of Death, has no power to punish a surrendered devotee who has accidentally committed sinful activities. As stated here, Krishna is Parish, or the Supreme Lord, and all secondary lords, such as all as the demigods, cannot threaten the Lord's personal devotees. In his youth, Ajmil had been a pious Brahmana engaged in the service of the Lord. Then, by bad association with prostitute, he became practically the most degraded man in the world. At the end of his life, Yamaraj sent his Yamadutis to drag away the soul of the sinful Ajmil, but the Personality of Godhead immediately sent his personal associates to save Ajmil and demonstrate to Yamaraj that no secondary personality can disturb the personal devotees of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, as stated in the Bhagavad Gita, Kuntaya Patijanihi Name Bhakta Panasati. The argument may be raised that the Smriti Shastra states, Shruti Smriti Mamayivagye, the Vedic scriptures are the direct orders of the Personality of Godhead. Therefore, one may ask, how can the Lord tolerate that his orders be occasionally neglected even by his devotees? To answer this possible objection, the word Priyasa is used in this verse. The devotees of the Lord are very dear to the Lord. Although the beloved child may accidentally commit an abominable activity, the loving father forgives the child, taking into consideration the actual good intentions of the child. Thus, although the devotee of the Lord does not try to exploit the Lord's mercy by requesting the Lord to free him from any future suffering, the Lord, by his own initiative, frees the devotee from the reactions to accidental fall downs. This causeless mercy of the Lord upon his devotee is his paramaishvaryam, or supreme opulence. Gradually the faithful devotee becomes free even from accidental fall down, because simply by remembering the lotus feet of the Lord, what to speak of actively rendering service to him, his heart is purified. Although the surrendered devotees of the personality of Godhead may sometimes appear to be affected by mundane attitudes, they are inevitably protected by the merciful Lord and are never actually defeated in life. So read the translation again. One who has thus given up all other engagements and has taken full shelter at the lotus feet of Hari, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, is very dear to the Lord. Indeed, if such a surrendered soul accidentally commits some sinful activity, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is seated within everyone's heart, immediately takes away the reaction to such sin. So, this is actually the conclusion of Narada's teachings to Vasudeva. So this is the last verse. Understanding that, of course, is very important. We need to understand this verse in its context of all the instructions spoken so far. This 11th canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam began with a description of the imminent departure of Lord Krishna from this world, and the signs of Krishna winding up the Yadu dynasty. So that was in chapter 1. In chapter 2, these instructions by Narada Muni to Vasudeva begin, and this is the last verse of from chapter 2 to 5, and this is the last verse of those instructions. Vasudeva, actually, he had heard a rumor that Krishna was about to depart from this world, and he was feeling a little sorry because he'd remembered that he had actually prayed that in a previous life, he had actually prayed, this has all been revealed to him by Krishna himself, actually, as Suttapa and Prishni. He prayed for Krishna to become his son so that he could serve the Lord in this world as his son. So, because he actually prayed for Krishna, to serve Krishna as his son, he's counted as one of the pure devotees of the Lord, because his only desire is to serve the Lord. Whereas there are others who have prayed to have a son just like the Lord. So not exactly the Lord, but someone just like the Lord, in which case they're not counted as pure devotees of the Lord. So, but Vasudeva, of course, we have to remember that in that prayer, he was actually bewildered by Krishna's own spiritual potency, spiritual energy, so that it would precipitate the appearance of Krishna and the various pastimes of Krishna Leela. So in the same way that Arjuna was bewildered by Krishna so that Krishna would have the opportunity to speak the Bhagavad Gita, so we should not consider the bewilderment of Vasudeva to be that of an ordinary conditioned soul. But Vasudeva was lamenting. He understood, well, I've heard that Krishna may actually be planning winding up his earthly pastimes, and so he was lamenting that he hadn't actually taken the opportunity to properly engage in devotional service of the Lord, and he hadn't prayed to the Lord for liberation. So he was thinking, how foolish. I've asked the Lord to come here so I can offer him service, but I actually haven't asked the Lord for liberation. And now the Lord's about to depart. So I think I've missed my opportunity. So he was thinking like this. And at that time, of course, Narada Muni appeared on the scene. And Narada Muni, he asked Narada Muni if he could explain to him the process of devotional service, which he understood was the best way to obtain liberation from the material world. So then Narada Muni began to explain to Vasudeva the process of devotional service, and he related the story in order to explain, answer Vasudeva's questions. He related the story of the king of Adeha, King Nimi, and his discussions with the Navi Yogendras. So there are nine sons of Rishabh. Rishabhdev had 100 sons, one of which was Bharat, who achieved liberation through devotional service in three lifetimes. There were nine others who each ruled one of the different islands of Bharatvash, Jambavita, actually. There was 81 who actually disseminated the process of Karmakanda, and there were nine known as the Navi Yogendras who were very, very expert in distributing transcendental knowledge throughout the world very vigorously. So those Navi Yogendras, they spoke with King Nimi, and their discussion answered the questions of Vasudeva to Narada Muni about the process of devotional service. So in conclusion, we see in that discussion that of all the different processes, devotional service is the most powerful way to achieve liberation from the material world, and devotional service is extremely pleasing to the Lord, very, very potent and independent from any other process. These things were all discussed. These we also heard how devotional service is so wonderful that in this age of Kali, where practically it is not possible to perform any of the Vedic processes properly, one can still achieve all perfection through devotional service. Therefore, and what's more, that persons from previous yugas and even in various demigods, they actually pray and worship Kali Yuga, because in this age one can achieve the perfection of life, realize one's relationship with the Supreme Personality of Godhead, go back to the spiritual world simply by sankirtan, chanting the holy names of the Lord, serving the holy name. So they describe that this age is particularly worshipful. And what was very, very difficult in previous ages, very difficult processes to achieve liberation and ultimate perfection, has been given as a very, very easy method and very powerful method in this age of Kali. So in this way, the Navi Yogendras describe the process of devotional service, how powerful it is, how easy it is, and even in this Kali Yuga, it is so easy and so powerful that an intelligent person, they will take up this process and be very easily delivered. And it is such a wonderful process that people from other ages, realizing that in Kali Yuga this process will be there, they desire that, yes, let me also take advantage of that wonderful age of Kali. So these are the different instructions that were given. The last couple of verses here, again, the Navi Yogendras are describing the particular glorious features of bhakti, devotional service. So in the previous verse it described that one who takes the devotional service, they're not obligated to anyone else in this world. Their only obligation is their devotional service to Krishna. In other words, such a devotee, all their needs for religious life, economic development, sense gratification, liberation, they should not fear that because they have somehow neglected some particular process or some particular person or some particular duty, that they will not be sufficiently advanced in, you know, religion, economic development, sense gratification, or religion. That Krishna is explaining that they actually, if one performs devotional service, they have no other duties to perform, yet at the same time all their requirements are perfectly fulfilled by serving Krishna. In this verse here today, giving the last verse, so Krishna the Navi Yogendras go a little further in describing Krishna's kindness, that not only are all the requirements of the devotees met, even in the age of Kali, by devotional service, if they happen to somehow neglect the various processes of religion and the various duties according to the Vedic scriptures, but even if they're engaged in sinful activities accidentally, still devotional service is so powerful that they are still perfectly safe on the path of perfection. So if you actually tie that in with Vasudeva's original concern that I have not prayed for liberation, we can see here ultimately in first giving us faith in devotional service as the best process, and ultimately the benefits here that Narada Muni through this history has described to him, that what fear do you need to have for liberation? Here, of course, Vasudeva is the servant of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, most dear servant in the mood of parental relationship, always acting in such a way to serve the Supreme Personality of Godhead, never engaged in any irreligious activities or sinful activities or separate activities, not desiring anything for himself but simply praying to serve the Lord. So Narada Muni is saying that he has no fear, such a person has no fear. If even a person who's on this path sometimes accidentally slips up and engages in sinful activities is still assured of success, then what is your position, Vasudeva? Right? This is the glory of devotional service, and this is your glory, Vasudeva. So this is the in essence the conclusion of Narada Muni's instructions in order to pacify the mind of Vasudeva. So however, the verse should not be taken out of context, because especially in Kali Yuga, where everything is taken very cheaply, others may see this verse and we may think that Krishna is saying that basically I can do as I please, and as long as I'm, you know, wearing the dress of a devotee and chanting a few mantras here and there and what have you, whatever I please is okay, Krishna will, you know, forgive me, and I'll still go back to Godhead. So we still have to put this verse into its proper context so people don't take advantage or, you know, abuse the kindness of Krishna. So we can speak a few words on that. Actually, a nice story to sort of illustrate this is here it gives the story of Ajmer. There's another story that came to my mind was the story of Bilvamangaladhakur. Srila Bilvamangaladhakur, in his previous life, he actually achieved a perfection in devotional service almost to the point of prema bhakti. Very, very elevated devotee. Actually, he came to the point of bhava bhakti. So he had, you know, perfected his sadhana and was actually feeling very powerful spiritual emotions spontaneously in relationship to the Supreme Lord. And yet, somehow or another, his devotional service was stopped. He fell down from the path and then he took birth again. Then he took birth in the family of a very pious Brahmana, very wealthy and very Brahminical. So you see how Krishna describes in the Bhagavad Gita that one whose advancement in devotional service is checked, then either they take birth in the family of very aristocratic, wealthy persons, or if they've been devotees for long periods of time, they may take birth in the families of very pure devotees like that. So, but one way or another, this verse that we're reading today confirms that devotional service, the asset of devotional service, is never checked. That is another very important point from today's verse, that Krishna is so kind that even if one accidentally slips up, ordinarily, in any other path you take, that's it. You can be finished. You know, so many things in this material world, what to speak of so many different processes that one may follow for perfection. If one slips up and stops, in essence, the advancement can be checked at that point, and one can then, wander off into many different species of life in the material world, birth and death, over many, many, many lifetimes. But the difference with devotional service is that Krishna is saying, even if there is some major slip up, again one takes to sinful activities with pronounced sense gratification, that Krishna will give the opportunity in the next life to take birth in such a way that he can again revive his devotional service. So Bilvamangaladhakur, he took birth in such a family, and Srila Prabhupada comments that many people in the West are in that position, that they've actually taken birth in a nice, comfortable situation, really, in order that they don't have to struggle. Many people in the West, and of course many people in India, he was at this stage, of course, he was particularly pointing out that because the Western world is known for its opulence, and especially in America and places like Australia and what have you, they're very opulent, considered to many other parts of the world, although that is all changing. But there's facility there, but Prabhupada describes that even though that facility is there, we see that one of the problems is that instead of taking seriously that opportunity, I don't have to struggle hard in this life, let me therefore finish the business of devotional service, they think, oh, I don't have to struggle hard in life, let me enjoy sense gratification, as much as I can. So, just as many Westerners follow that path, Bilvamangaladhakur, he followed that path as well. And he actually was one of the main disciples of Vishnu Swami. He was in the Vishnu Swami sect, and he came, it was about 8th century, something like that. So he was married, and he became particularly fallen. He became very attached to this particular prostitute. I think her name was Chintamani. And he was so attached that at one particular stage, they were actually performing the Shraddha ceremony for his father. And he was thinking, I just want to get out of here and go and see Chintamani. So, you know, he's sort of saying to the priest who's doing the, you know, ceremony, sort of, you know, come on, let's finish, you know. I just want to take some of this food and, you know, go and enjoy Chintamani. So he was, you know, just on another planet. So he was, anyway, he got the food, and on this particular occasion, this mighty storm, rain started, you know, pelting down, and he had to cross the river. Now, of course, Chintamani on the other side of the river, when she understood, well, he's not coming today, no crazy person is going to come out in this weather, she just closed up the compound gates and the windows and the doors and just stayed inside. But he's thinking otherwise, no, I'm going to see Chintamani. So he wanted to cross the river, but there were no boats because they thought it was just unsafe. We won't even put a boat on the river. So he thought, I'll swim. So he's swimming across the river, and he's getting in a bit of trouble. So there was this log that came past. He said, I'll grab hold of the log. Actually, the log was a dead body that was floating. But still he thought, no, if I grab hold of this dead body, I can get across to the other side. So he sort of paddled across to the other side with this dead body. And then when he, you know, got to her home, and then the compound gates, all gates were shut, so he had to scale this very high wall in the rain and the thunder and the lightning. And so he's climbing up, and there were snakes. So, you know, one stage he thought he was grabbing hold of a vine, but he actually grabbed hold of a snake that wanted to bite him. But still, somehow, he pushed on, and then he got to her door, and he was, you know, banging on the door. And then she came out, and she was very, very astonished, very, very surprised. That, you know, here is this, he had a different name at that stage. Wasn't Bilpa Mangala at the court at that stage, but you know, here is Bilpa Mangala, you know, dripping with, you know, water, you know, muddy, obviously exhausted. You know, I can't imagine what that bag of food looked like at that stage, if he still had it. And he said to her, she said to him, that, you know, utilize your energy, and such, instead of being attracted to the skin and flesh and bones, you know, of so-called beautiful women in this world, if you could have used that attraction and that determination to take up the devotional service and become attracted to the transcendental body of Krishna, your life would have been completely perfect. So immediately hearing that instruction from Chintamani, immediately his consciousness from his previous life was revived, and he understood, and he immediately went to Vrindavan to take up devotional service again. Srila Prabhupada actually remarks Bilpa Mangala Thakur in his Krishna Kanamrita, I think that's what it's called, in his book, he wrote a book while he was in Vrindavan, which was collected by Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Bilpa Mangala Thakur lived in Vrindavan for 700 years, and while he was there, he wrote this very, very beautiful book about one's eagerness to serve Krishna in the mood of Srimati Radharani. And when Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was travelling in South India, he collected that book. It was a handwritten manuscript. He got that, and he got the Brahma Samhita, and he took them back and he distributed among his very elevated devotees. So in the beginning of that book, Bilva Mangala Thakur, he offers respectful obeisances to Chintamani as his spiritual master, one who shows the way to Krishna. He also offers respectful obeisances to his initiating spiritual master, who is a different person, I mean, Samagiri. And he also offers obeisances to Lord Krishna, who he also accepts as his spiritual master. So he understood that Srila Prabhupada comments that his spiritual master acted through Chintamani to speak such words in order to deliver him. So this is the mercy of the spiritual master, and this is the role of the spiritual master, that they will take the responsibility voluntarily to deliver one who's on the path of devotional service life after life until that soul is delivered to the lotus feet of Krishna. That is the responsibility, huge responsibility and huge sacrifice actually that the spiritual master takes in order to deliver the conditioned souls. So Srila Prabhupada says that one should not take advantage of this. One should not force the spiritual master to have to come and deliver us from the house of a prostitute. You know, we should not embarrass ourselves, and we should not put the spiritual master to such trouble that somehow in our next life we end up in such a degraded situation. The spiritual master has to come, you know, and deliver us from a very embarrassing situation. One time someone asked Srila Prabhupada that, is it true that the spiritual master will, you know, keep coming back in the material world until he's actually delivered a disciple who somehow, you know, falls down from the path? And Srila Prabhupada said, yes, but don't take advantage of it. The facility is there, but don't take it. He said, that's actually especially for those who are slack. It's not the facility for... It's not one who actually has a affection for the spiritual master would not take advantage of that. One who actually considers the spiritual master to be very dear, very worshipable, they would not take advantage of that, because they understand that I am, you know, putting the spiritual master to so much difficulty. So Srila Prabhupada was saying that one should think that all facility has been given, that from a previous life somehow there's been some arrangement. Krishna has allowed me to take birth in such a way that I have all facility to take up devotional service. Let me take it very seriously. There is no need to chase any other things in this material world. As stated in these verses, Krishna is supplying everything. We have a devotee doesn't have to perform other duties. He's not obligated to anyone else. And yet everything is perfectly allocated for the devotee, that the devotee has everything they require without separate endeavour in order to finish up the business of devotional service and go back to Godhead. So one should not think, you know, let me just, you know, enjoy you know, if there's some problem, my spiritual master will, you know, sort of come and save me in another lifetime. Actually, one time, Srila Prabhupada wrote a letter to Jaipataka Swami, and Jaipataka Swami was asking about the same question. And Srila Prabhupada confirmed, yes, that the spiritual master will, you know, come and deliver the disciple life after life, but he said that if a disciple the duty of the disciple is to serve the spiritual master, to please the spiritual master. And the greatest offence is to disobey the orders of the spiritual master. That is, of all the offences, that is the greatest offence. As we know, the Vaishnava aparad, to offend a Vaishnava, is considered the mad elephant offence. Of all Vaishnavas, the Guru is the greatest Vaishnava. To offend the Guru by willfully disobeying the instructions, that is a very, very serious offence. So, Prabhupada described in this letter to Jayapataka Swami that to willfully, intentionally defy the spiritual master, is very serious, and that the spiritual master it actually severs the relationship of the disciple with the spiritual master. And Srila Prabhupada says, actually, the guru is not obligated to such a disciple who willfully defies his instructions, taking advantage of, I'll do as I please, he must come back and get me anyway. But Srila Prabhupada is saying that when that willful defiance and disobedience and offensive mentality is there, the spiritual master, then Krishna and the spiritual master, they conclude, where is the obligation for such a rascal? So the verse is there, but one should be very, very careful that thinking, it describes here actually says here, although the beloved child may accidentally commit an abominable activity, the loving father forgives the child, taking into consideration the actual good intentions of the child. Thus, although the devotee of the Lord does not try to exploit the Lord's mercy by requesting the Lord to free him from any future suffering, the Lord, by his own initiative, frees the devotees from the reactions of accidental fall downs. So the Lord actually takes into consideration the intentions, and according to the intentions, this verse is applied. When the good intentions of one on the path of devotional service are there, this verse is applied. That the Lord will save him, deliver him, and even free him from the reactions, and ultimately act in such a way to remove any desire to commit sinful activities. But if those good intentions are not there, there's that willful defiance, and this verse is not available to such persons. So, therefore, as Srila Prabhupada said, the desire should be, a disciple should think, that everything has been provided by Krishna, as confirmed in the previous verse. Everything is there. There's no need for me to separately do anything but devotional service and go back to Godhead. So a devotee's desire, so of course this is also an instruction to Vasudeva by Narada Muni. He's saying, what need do you desire liberation? What need do you have, what to speak of lesser things, like sense gratification, economic development? Why do you need to desire those things? The Lord is so kind that automatically all those things are there, that is stated here, and he is so kind that what to speak, great devotees like yourself who are so nicely engaged, even one who sometimes falls down, the Lord will deliver him, is guaranteed. So therefore when we chant, and as Srila Prabhupada, Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he teaches us that we should chant the Hare Krishna in this mood. Nādhanam nājanam nāsundarim kagatambā devirishikamaye mamma janmani janmanishvare bhavatada bhakti haitaki tai. O my Lord, I have no desire to accumulate wealth. Lord, I desire beautiful women. Lord, I want any number of followers. I only want your causeless devotional service, birth after birth. So this is Narada Muni ultimately saying the same thing that Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said. You do not need to ask for liberation, Vasudev. You do not need to ask for anything. Simply ask to be engaged in the service of the Lord, life after life, and everything else is guaranteed. Abhilpa Mangala Thakur, in his book, he wrote one verse, and he said that simply by engaging in the devotional service of the Lord, one can very easily see the presence of Krishna everywhere at all times. And as far as liberation is banging on the door of the devotee with folded hands, saying, please, can I serve you? What to speak of other benedictions like economic development, religiosity and sense gratification. These things are automatically waiting to serve the devotee of the Lord who is so dear to the Lord. These are the prayers of Bilva Mangala at the core. So one need not ask for anything. We should only ask for devotional service. Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Sarasvati gives this example. He said, if we approach a very, very wealthy person, we should not ask for a handful of ashes. You go to someone who's very, very wealthy. Oh, please, sir, can you give me just a little handful of ashes? And Srila Prabhupada tells another story of the woman who was collecting firewood in the forest. And so she's collecting firewood, which she stacks up on her back, and she's walking through the forest, and she has such a heavy load, very old, frail woman, and all the sticks fall off, and she's crying, and then she prays to the Lord, dear Lord, I need your help, dear Lord. And the Lord actually appears before her. You are my devotee, what can I do? Can you please take these sticks and put them back on my back? That's what it's like. Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has appeared, the holy name has appeared. We shouldn't be asking, you please put the burdens of material existence, just load me up again. Finish with the loading up of the sticks on the back. Ask for one thing. You take those sticks off my back forever. Let me engage in your service. And this is the actual prayer. And we see that Bilva Mangala Thakur, just to finish the story, how the Lord actually personally provides for his devotee. Because Bilva Mangala Thakur, when he then travelled to Vrindavan, and when he was on his way, he again became attracted to this very beautiful woman he saw walking, and he thought, ah, and he followed her to her home. When she got to her home, she said to her husband, there's this Brahmana who's been following me, and he's obviously very attracted. Now the husband, somehow being inspired by the Lord, he said yes. So he's a Brahmana, he's asking in charity, he appears to be a devotee, and you offer him that service. And you go and dress yourself very nicely. You comb your hair. So she dressed and she came out, and Bilva Mangala Thakur was there. And of course, when he saw that she was ready to, embrace him and kiss him, and her husband is so pious that he was, would do this for a Brahmana, he became so ashamed, so embarrassed. And he said, to the lady, can I borrow your hairpins? So she gave him her hairpin, and he plucked out his eyes. Said, these eyes are my enemy. Yeah, I must say, don't do that. Alright? That's not the purport of this class. I don't want to see a bunch of devotees walk around the courtyard all, my. Please. Alright? We won't get many people joining, and we won't get much service done. But we can certainly see the determination of Bill, you know, finally coming to his senses. Life after life, just fanatically chasing the same thing. Yeah, that's finished. This life's finished. So he went to Vrindavan, and he would sit in Vrindavan, and he would just chant the holy names of the Lord. And as I said, he wrote these beautiful literatures. But he would make no endeavour for anything else. He wouldn't even worry to go and feed himself. Anything. He wouldn't. That's it. I've chased all these goals in previous life. I'm not even going to, you know, if I starve to death, that's it. I'm just going to chant and meditate on Krishna. And this little boy, this little cowherd boy in Vrindavan, used to come and daily, and he would, you know, see this devotee chanting, and he would say, "So, you know, how are you providing?" And he says, "There is no provisions for food." He said, "I just live close by. I will daily bring you some milk." So every day, Krishna used to bring him some milk, and as Prabhupada describes, he used to also play music and dance for him, and so many different things, entertain him at this. So Krishna was actually personally coming to offer, you know, to deliver all the requirements for his devotees. So this is the conclusion of these chapters of Krishna consciousness, that feel perfectly protected and safe in devotional service. Everything required in this lifetime, Krishna will supply it. Don't even bother asking. If you have anything to ask from Krishna, chant Hare Krishna and pray, "Let me engage in your service." And even if we feel that we're not qualified and there's some slip up on the path, Krishna guarantees, "I will protect you. Your asset will remain fixed, your asset of devotional service, and I will make sure that you go back to Godhead." So I'll leave it there. If anyone has any questions or comments, just quickly.
Thank you for a very nice class. Now, in the verse, second line, you have taken full shelter and you have received.
Mm-hmm.
So how do you define full shelter?
Full shelter means one who agrees to abide by the instructions of the spiritual master. Any other questions? All right, thank you very much. Hare Krishna.